right. Well, hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. This is Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE Greg. Once again at the SAE Innovations and Mobility Conference in Novi, Michigan. Recording a ton of great episodes with experts in the field, both in the U.S. and internationally, which brings me to our guest today, Jan Hellecker, who is the chairman of Drive Sweden. Jan, thank you for coming on. Really happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I guess we can start by, if you could just tell us sort of how you got into the automotive sector and what you're doing at Drive Sweden. Would be really interested to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I started my career with Ericsson, so I learned a little bit about communication, and then when I wanted to career change, I happened to end up with in the Volvo company, which at that time in the late 80s was one of the same company. So from there on, basically all the time I've been pushing development in the automotive business more towards services and solutions than to looking at specific technologies. So I've been very fortunate to have been part of that development for about 30 years by now. Mm-hmm. Then 5 years ago, I was offered the opportunity to lead this program, Drive Sweden, which is a unified national effort in Sweden to help us transform into a smarter mobility by primarily leveraging new technologies in the field of connected and automated and not to forget shared vehicles. So we're trying to build an ecosystem around that, which will make this transition as smooth as possible and hopefully as fast as possible as well.
Mm-hmm. And so is this is it the Swedish government that runs this, or is this sort of a private initiative?
Well, that's the question I always stumble on, because this is really a true public-private partnership. So yes, the government provides the framework, they provide 50% of the funding, but private industries need to match up the remaining 50 or more. But that said, on our partnership, we have now some 125 partners, which ranges from typical government agencies that are definitely part of this because they have to be, but down to small startups that didn't even exist when we started the program. So it's really a joint collaboration, or sometimes you could call it an innovation ecosystem, mm-hmm. bringing all sorts of stakeholders together to work on issues that are too complex to be dealt with by one vehicle OEM, for example, which was used to be the case in the past.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of complexity, there's been so much of a focus on autonomous vehicles and a lot of excitement about it. But what advances do you also see sort of in connected and shared vehicles? We'll jump into autonomous in a second, but where do you see those benefits?
I think that's a really important issue, because I think the entire world has pretty much come to the conclusion that we can't keep on traveling 1.3 person in every single car. We love to have our private car or cars even, mm-hmm. But we also know that there's idling 95% or more of the time. And given the fact that we have such a fast-moving urbanization, more and more people are moving into the cities, we just unfortunately need to get rid of our cars and try to travel in different ways. And then I think these technologies that you mentioned, cars being more connected and more connected to other means of transportation, that's what's going to make it possible for us to travel smoother, more efficient, safer, and also at a much lower cost than we're used to today. But it takes a bit of a mindset change to make that happen, of course, and that's why we're here.
And how is that mindset change sort of taking place in Sweden? I assume the car is also dominant in Sweden, so how do you sort of cause that behavioral change to happen?
It's dominant to some extent, that's true, but we also have now we're talking primarily about the bigger cities, we have mm-hmm. a really comprehensive transit system, public transportation, which works very well. It's not like in the U.S. where in many cities it's you're not supposed to, if you have a high paid job, you're not supposed to go transit to work. That's mm-hmm. not the case in Sweden. I mean, it could even be the other way around, that it's you get some social credits by going on the bus mm-hmm. or tram to work rather than taking your own car. So I think that change is happening a lot easier in Sweden than in many other countries. I think that goes the same in many European countries, we have the same thing, and in Asia for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I wanted to get into sort of the regulations and sort of policy aspects of this. What sort of impediments are you seeing in Sweden, I guess the EU more broadly, towards adopting, say, autonomous vehicles? What challenges are we facing there?
Well, clearly everyone or any country has a problem with the current regulations when you vehicles become more and more self-driving or driverless even. Mm-hmm. So that's something that needs to be dealt with first at a national level and then on a higher level as well. And there we have the UNEC conventions that are sort of the big elephant in the room here that needs to be taken care of. That for those countries that have ratified that, there's got to be a human being in control of the vehicle, which is not mm-hmm. going to be the case if we go fully automated.
And this is a sort of UN treaty that everyone signed on to that requires this, right? So is it most developed countries that have already signed on to this?
Well, I think there is a difference in what way you're signed off. If I understand it right, many countries have signed off, but not everyone has ratified it. So I think, for example, that the US is not complied to be on, right. under that regulation.
Huh.
But that's just as you say, autonomous cars, driverless cars is something for the future, still fully autonomous, and so that's where you need to start to work on policy. But when you look at multimodal transportation and smart mobility as a whole, there are so many other issues that come up. Look at e-scooters. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what that was 18 months ago. Now every city in the world is looking at how to deal with that. So that's a different kind of policy change. If you look at going more into the sharing economy and doing peer-to-peer car sharing, we in Sweden we realized that there was a tax issue related to that needed to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. So I think while we love to speak about technology and the opportunities and challenges with that, I think the policy part of this is something which will be even more important in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And so your objective is to sort of encourage that innovations happening in the technology space, also be carrying over into the policy space. How do you approach sort of regulators of traditional motor vehicles and get them to understand the potential here, and also need to maybe be a little more flexible in how we're approaching future regulations?
Yeah, the that's true. Well, let me just go back one step and say that we're looking at Drive Sweden as a program. We don't really deal with vehicle technology at all, but we're mm-hmm. looking at the surrounding framework. We're looking at policy development. We're looking at business models. We're mm-hmm. looking at society planning effects on this. But to come to your question here, I think fortunately all vehicle manufacturers that I'm aware of at least seem to have come to a conclusion that a change is coming, so let's make it as smooth as possible. So I don't see a big opposition with the current car manufacturers. We're talking about passenger cars here, and on the Swedish scene obviously we have Volvo, who has really embraced this new mm-hmm. world that is coming and is trying to be as competitive as they can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that one of the things that has been really evaluated in the U.S. is the importance of public education and getting the mm-hmm. public prepared to understand the benefits of AVs and other technologies in order to ensure that we're maximizing them. We have the Partners for Automated Vehicle Education, mm-hmm. PAVE, in the U.S. How are you thinking about public education, and are there similar organizations that are sort of doing this in addition to Drive Sweden?
I mentioned a few of the themes that we're working on to sort of pave the way for this transition, and public engagement is one of them. So, mm-hmm. so I'm not aware of any other organization that is doing that just like the way that PAVE does in the U.S., but mm-hmm. That's one important part of what we do. So if you look at AVs, we've had a number of pilots happening now in the bigger cities in Sweden, and I think we've probably carried close to 50, if not 100,000 passengers on autonomous shuttles now in the last 18 months. And I think that's an important part to make people feel comfortable and not afraid of going in with an AV now when that development comes. So I don't see that so much of a problem. There's a lot of surveys now when people are being asked in different countries, would you dare to go into an autonomous vehicle, and you get all kinds of answers, but I think it's you really can't that question until you've had someone actually trying it, because they don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. And I can just give you an example of some of the investigations or surveys we did after these all these pilots. And typically the confidence in the technology and all other parameters we ask for is higher when people disembark than before they start a journey on this AV shuttle. So we don't see that being a bigger problem in Sweden. Also, we're known as being early adopters of any kind of technology, so that should make it easy as well.
Right, that's great. So I guess in terms of, we had talked before we came on about how there's been such a focus on physical infrastructure in the past several decades, for as long as we've had a transportation sector. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing this digitization of infrastructure. We're seeing this digital infrastructure as well. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about how you're thinking about digital infrastructure and what the importance of that is there?
Sure. That was one part that we picked up on earlier, and now we have a national plan for how to make our infrastructure as digital as it takes. And why is that? Well, the good thing with AVs is that they're not going to require as much physical modifications as some people have believed to work. And obviously that would never happen because it would be way too expensive to do that.
Right. We have to design them for the roads today.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But you can do a lot with the digital infrastructure, and I mean that starts at the map level, which obviously is going to be one of the crucial issues for AVs. But when you start looking at communication and connected vehicles and what started as a telematics business some 15, 20 years ago, I think this is just part of everything being connected now. And I think from now on, anything that's moving, you want it to be as connected as possible. You want it to be part of a big network. Traffic management authorities at all different levels would like to know more about how we're traveling. And I think that can be done without sort of jeopardizing personal privacy or security as well, because we really need to make this work in a system. And particularly if you look at state-of-the-art with AVs today, which aren't that communicating, aren't that much communicating with each other, given the safety limits that any responsible vehicle manufacturer would have applied, they're going to be driving much more cautiously than you and I do, mm-hmm. Which means that for as long as there is no accidents nor incidents, we're actually going to slow down traffic when vehicles become mm-hmm. Autonomous. And that needs to be mitigated with them communicating with each other and with the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of work to be done on that. And if you look at specific use cases, we in Sweden focus quite a bit on geofencing today, sort of applying different rules. It could be a carrot and a stick model, depending on where you are when you're there and what capabilities you have. And I think connected vehicle and the digital infrastructure has a lot of potential in that you can, I don't know, just take an example, open up a bus lane overnight when there is no traffic, but everyone is heading home from a football game. Mm-hmm. That's one example, or not to mention security threats, which is actually what triggered this debate in Sweden after we had a very unfortunate terrorist attack in the center of Stockholm, mm-hmm. In which you would may want to be able to disable a truck rushing through a pedestrian street. But from there on, I think there is really no limit to this. And if we are to survive in a infrastructure in an urban environment, which is not going to be increased as far as size, we need to look at higher level strategies for how to manage traffic. So whereas in the past, we're pretty much dealt with more of reactive traffic management in cities, I think digital infrastructure, more connected vehicles will enable more proactive traffic management, and maybe in the future we'll get even closer to something close to what's happening in the air, mm-hmm. with an air traffic control system. The only reason being that we need to balance traffic over time and streets and roads and what have you.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of policies do you feel, I mean, if you mentioned traffic management, of course, which sort of happens more at the local level, but what sort of national level policies would be needed to advance AVs or CVs in Sweden specifically?
I don't think we need any policies to drive that. I think we may need policies to stop us or stop them from doing some things. Mm-hmm. But I think when technology matures, and obviously it's going to start in the commercial business with commercial vehicles, and again mm-hmm. starting in confined areas, moving slowly outside of closed areas, and that it's going to be self-driving, no pun intended here, that there's going to be business in it, so people would want to do that with or without policies. But then of course at some point there will be need to be policies to make sure that they are managed in the right and in a responsible way.
Mm-hmm. And this really reflects it mirrors a lot of what's happening in the U.S. is looking at how to enable the innovation in the space without clamping down with sort of prescriptive regulations that are going to push it any which mm-hmm. way. Can we talk about mobility as a service?
I would love to.
What are you thinking about mobility as a service? And there's so much discussion of it in the transportation space. We're seeing this sort of, I guess, slow growth and proliferation of it. But sort of where do you see that as being now in Sweden? And where do you see that going?
I think we're in a very good position in the Scandinavian countries. In Sweden, Finland is doing some really good things. And this is something we truly believe in. Sometimes when I'm being asked, what is it really that drives Sweden do from a friend of, then I sometimes say, yeah, we want to do a Spotify on the transportation industry or on mobility. Mm-hmm. Because just like the streaming companies made us stop buying records and CDs that we rarely used.
Right, and carting them around everywhere, yeah.
Exactly. And subscribe to the needs. I think that is really what needs to happen in mobility to turn mobility into a much smarter thing. Mm-hmm. So then obviously the challenge is the business model there, because ideally you not want to do only build another silo. I mean, you have obviously all the ride-hailing companies that is a start to that, mm-hmm. and now they're starting to integrate scooters and slowly treading into the transit department as well. Mm-hmm. But we really need something which is truly ubiquitous here that cover pretty much anything but possibly air travel, maybe taking it a little bit too far. But that is going to be involve some really serious tweaking of business models. We're having a discussion in Sweden right now how the public transport operators and agencies, they need to be willing and able to share third-party tickets to private operators of MaaS services. Mm-hmm. That's just one example. This is definitely not rocket science, but you need the same capabilities that was able to negotiate deals with a zillion different record companies and turn that into one service and handle the financial transactions in a smooth way, because now we're all used to having very convenient, very user-friendly apps on our smartphones, and that's what we need to do here as well. And if you have come that far, then the next issue has come, because this is likely to start at the city level, or regional level, or at best national level. But just like when we started using cell phone internationally some 20 years ago, when we had lots of technology pockets all around the world, non-compatible standards and no roaming and so forth, we need to come to a solution in which we also have a nationwide or even global roaming on mobility as a service, because otherwise it's not going to fly.
And so it seems like you see that as being, as MaaS as being something that's going to be privately driven, but with public cooperation. Is that how you say it would?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it has to be privately driven. I would love, and I would think that the typical major transit agencies in the big cities, they should be allowed to run their service as well, but it should be on a fully competitive basis with the private ones. Mm-hmm. So again, there's the challenge of balancing their margins on their offering to the customer to the one that the competitor could do for them to get access to the system. But also, just in a reflection here from coming back from the ITS World Congress in Singapore last week, in the very same day, in a few hours, I heard two completely opposite statements on MaaS services, which sort of struck me as that we really have a tough work ahead of us here, because firstly, one representative from one of the major European car manufacturing countries said that I don't see how Moss will ever fly because it's way too expensive. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't understand how could that be. But then it turned out that he didn't took his Mercedes out of the equation. So he wanted to have his car as he had it, but then add Moss on that and still for it to be cheaper, mm-hmm. which is obviously going to be quite a challenge.
Defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. Then the other, on the other side of the scale, there was an Asian real estate developer who was looking at a major deployment of real estate, and he wanted to include mobility as part of the residential package as a service.
I love that.
I love that too.
Huh. Very cool. And so I guess that brings us to another interesting question, which is really around the relationship between the built environment and also mobility. And how can we get people to think about how their mobility patterns are really influenced by where they choose to live and mm-hmm. the density of the cities that we have? Mm-hmm. How do you think about that more generally?
I think this kind of smart mobility, integrated mass services, allows us to be much more flexible. Should we only get AVs rolled out, then the chances of the urban sprawl is going to be a dramatic problem mm-hmm. all around the world, because if we can sleep, we can eat, we can work in the car, I mean, it doesn't really matter how long time we spend there.
Right.
And that wouldn't be good for anyone, and for sure for not for the environment. Mm-hmm. So we got to have a combination there. And there I think that the combination of AVs feeding mobility hubs, feeding customers into mobility hubs where they can hop on the train that, of course, runs on schedule and mm-hmm. is part of the already paid subscription or ticket. I mean, that's going to make it flexible. So I think we can cater to a lot of different people needs if we manage to pull this together, combining all the modalities in one simple application.
Mm-hmm. And that brings up the question of, you know, congestion pricing and some of the policies that a lot of cities across Europe have put in place on restricting driving at least internal combustion engines through city centers, things mm-hmm. like that. What's happening with that in Sweden? I'd be really interested to hear.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen, I mean, the discussion is going on whether to ban diesel engines or combustion engines in some part of the city. It hasn't really happened yet. It's good, but I think that the bigger problem is that we, with ride hailing, and you see that already in cities like New York and San Francisco, that mm-hmm. You increase vehicle miles traveled because there are too many Uber drivers looking for work. Mm-hmm. And think about when eventually there won't be any drivers in those cars, but when they will be electrified, mm-hmm. they're going to be able to offer you and I transportation at the price per kilometer or mile that is way less than what you pay for to go on a subway or on a bus line. And that, I think, that will be the big policy problem, how to deal with that when that this day is there, because obviously all of us, we tend to be very convenient and want to travel comfortable. Then if you can travel in a two-seater car and mm-hmm. be taken to from A to B without changing modes, of course I would want to do that.
Right.
But we can't. So there's got to be a policy in place. And personally, I want to make it clear, this is not a Drive Sweden official view, but personally I think that we got to have I wouldn't call it congestion tax, but some sort of a miles travel tax based on occupancy in the car.
Absolutely.
Because clearly the worst thing that could happen is that we have ghost cars with no drivers running around looking for customers.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And, you know, I think that one of the things we really need to look at is using our roads more efficiently. As you had pointed out earlier, mm-hmm. the average occupancy of vehicles is 1.3, and that's just not going to do. We can't keep on building out roads forever in most or any developed country. Yep. And instead, figuring out what are those carrots and sticks, how do we incentivize sharing, I think is absolutely critical. So Drive Sweden really looks at is balancing sort of partnerships with industry and also sort of your goals for the public good. How do you balance a variety of different viewpoints, given you have something like what is 160 sort of companies involved, and then mm-hmm. You're also balancing the public goals of the Swedish government? How do you balance that out? And are there examples of sort of compromises that you're already working on reaching or have reached?
Well, what makes it a little bit easier for us is that we're still at an innovation level. We're not supposed to be an organization deploying anything commercially, but we can play with concepts and ideas, and then people will have to run with that and make it real for later. So we can allow ourselves to compromise. I haven't really seen that, but I think the beauty of our way of working, and this goes back to something that has been in Sweden and maybe part of Scandinavia for forever, that we're very much consensus-based. So this is not about the government handing us a little bit of money and do this, do that, or the other way around. But on my board, we have government agency representatives, we have startup representatives, and each votes carry as much as anyone else's. And that's the way we build consensus around these issues. And I think, given that nobody can possibly have a problem with transportation being cheaper, safer, more sustainable, and more efficient, so it's just maybe a little bit of a discussion how to get there, but everyone agrees on the end goal, and that's the important thing. And in the end, the steps there aren't really that crucial. That's more sort of the fine print that's going to be maybe a little bit of a headache.
I love that. It's starting at the why and then figuring out how and what you do to get there. So for anyone who's listening perhaps in other countries, What would you recommend if someone is, or if there are government leaders looking at how to improve their transportation system, help to encourage the adoption of new technologies? What can we learn from Drive Sweden that we can maybe pour over the United States or to other countries where we have listeners?
I think in Sweden, I know this sounds like an English term, but I don't think I rarely come across anyone outside of Sweden that knows what it is. But triple helix is what we call working with government, industry, and academia. Then some people want to add quadruple in this, taking the consumers into account as well, which of course needs to be there. But what I tend to see in Silicon Valley is that, and in the U.S. as a whole maybe, that there is a good collaboration between industry and researchers. That's what's happening around Stanford, Berkeley, and those places is what makes Silicon Valley going. I don't see that much of interaction with the government agencies, so I think it's really crucial to get to that point, that have early discussions, start discussing innovation at an early stage. But it's maybe easier said than done. We probably have had 20, 30 visits from different countries trying to understand how we work in Sweden, and even from countries that are apparently quite similar to Sweden, they don't understand this secret Swedish sauce. So there's something in the water, I think. That, because it's truly, it's natural to if you were a government agency representative sitting across from me, we would be friends. It's not that we would be, I wouldn't say enemies, that's the wrong way of putting it, but
not an adversarial relationship.
No, and
right?
I mean, both would be looking forward to collaborate and be very open to do that, and that's just how things are.
Well, I love that. It's definitely a Swedish secret sauce. Johan, thank you so much for joining me. I guess if folks want to learn more about Drive Sweden, do you have a website or Twitter where people can go?
Absolutely. We would love to have you there. Our URL is drivesweden.net, drivesweden, one word, .net. So we'll be happy to take any questions or input from feedback from your listeners there.
Excellent. And we'll post that in the show notes as well. Johan, thank you for joining me. One last thing for listeners. We are still at the SAE Innovations Mobility Conference. Follow the Twitter hashtag SAEIIM. I'm at AV Gregar on Twitter, and follow Mobility Podcast @Mobility Podcast. Thanks again, Johan. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.